Got a million emails.
No, not at all. Thank goodness. I actually.
All right.
Are we ready?
Good evening. This is Donna Moss, Chair of the City of Shoreline Planning Commission, calling to order the meeting for Thursday, March 7th, 2013. First item on the agenda is our roll call.
Commissioner Wagner.
Here.
Commissioner Scully.
Present.
Commissioner Montero.
Here.
Commissioner Maul.
Here.
Commissioner Kraft.
Present.
Vice Chair Esselman.
Here.
Chair Moss.
Here. Okay, next is approval of the agenda. Okay, seeing no recommended changes, we'll move on to our first set of directors' comments.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm Paul Cohen. I'm sitting here for the director, Rachel Markle. The only thing I had to mention was that the department wants to know if the Planning Commission would like to get a demonstration on right-sized parking. If all of you know what that's about, King County's been working with us and other jurisdictions about some sort of very actual-based parking demands within King County to see what they are, because we're always trying to get a handle on that. And we thought we'd give you a demonstration of that. Would you like that in a future meeting?
Yeah. Commissioners, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. That's it for my comments.
Okay, great. Approval of the February 7th regular meeting minutes. Any corrections or edits by any of the members? Okay. Seeing no comments or corrections, the meeting minutes are approved as presented. Next on our agenda this evening is our study session on regional green development code amendments.
Point of order, general public comment.
Oh, I am very sorry. Thank you. I skipped right over that. Do we have anyone signed up for general
public
comment?
Yes, Nancy Morris.
Okay. Thank you very much, Commissioner Wagner. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, if you would like to come to the podium, state your name and your city of residence, and you will have 3 minutes, I believe. The little lights will warn you.
My name is Nancy Morris, and I live in Shoreline. I'm here tonight just to encourage the Planning Commission to keep the local street designation on Richmond Beach Drive, as you recommended to the City Council in 2011. And I'm also hoping that in your capacity and that you can encourage the City Council to join Save Richmond Beach and the City of Woodway to file an amicus curiae brief. I'm sure you're all aware of these issues. And I also wanted to commend your efforts on finally making a subcommittee to deal with Point Wells. And I realize that the task that you're dealing with on this whole issue with Point Wells is very complex, but be aware that the majority of residents are not for the proposed development as recommended by the city staff. And I've already sent comments to all of you via email, and I think it's actually rather confusing of the types of recommendations the city staff is making, because it seems to be totally without regard to the residents of Shoreline, highly developed neighborhoods that have been here a long time. And this is not a public works operation. This is a private development. And I'm just thinking that I'm hoping people will hold to a certain standard of integrity and will do the right thing. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else signed up for public comment?
Do I have an opportunity when you're talking about the Point Wells item to give a comment then? Or is this my
No, that's just a decision. So if you would like to present now for general public comment, that would be great.
Okay.
Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Tom Jamison. I'm a resident of Shoreline. I want to call your attention to an item that was in the comprehensive plan for the as part of the major update. It was the Shoreline liquefaction map, which I have here, and I've distributed copies. One of the amendments to the comp plan was proposed by Save Richmond Beach involved pointing out that Point Wells was in fact the highest risk for liquefaction. And I noticed during the update procedures, especially during the public hearing, which was not held with the rest of the comp plan on October 18th, but the following month on November 15th, a special public hearing for Point Wells that covered not only the Point Wells subarea element, but also changes to the natural environment supporting analysis. That there were two passes through the document. One of them was showing the changes to the text, and another pass that went through showing changes to maps. And the map changes that were made apparently were focused on renaming the potential annexation area to a future service annexation area. And I was concerned at that time why the liquefaction map that was in the comp plan was not being updated to show Point Wells as a highest risk area for liquefaction. And in looking at the map, I noticed that Point Wells was not even depicted on the map. And as I watched the updates being shown by staff to the commissioners that evening, I noticed that they never even showed the shoreline liquefaction map, though I knew where it was in the draft document. They came down to it, they came up to it, but they didn't show it. And there were six maps in the comprehensive plan, I believe, that did show Point Wells. This one did not. And in the upper right-hand corner, I have drafted what I believe the changes would have been made had this document been updated to, and this map been updated to show the high-risk area of Point Wells. What was not shown, what I did not learn until yesterday when I went and I looked at the current approved comprehensive plan, is that this map has disappeared entirely from the comprehensive plan. It is not in the section natural environment supporting analysis. It has disappeared. It was NEA-1. NEA-1 is now the convergence map that was formerly NEA-2. And NEA-1, this liquefaction map, is, as far as I can tell, is not even in the document. I applaud Commissioner Montero's suggestion that there be a Point Wells subarea committee to focus specifically on the fast-moving items that are collectively Point Wells. And I would ask that the commission start by taking a close look at the proceedings dealing with Point Wells during the comprehensive plan update, internally possibly getting an independent third-party audit of the process. I appreciate your work, commissioners, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you. And no other public comment. Staff, is there anything that you would like to respond to at this time?
I'll look into the changes that were made, and I'm not prepared to answer that right now, but
okay.
Yeah, I'll have to get back to the speaker on that.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. All right, our study item of Regional Green Building Development Code Amendments begins on page 19 of our packet.
Hi. My name's Kim Lindberg. I'm an associate planner. It's been a long time since I've been before the Planning Commission, so forgive me if I'm a little rusty here.
You can pull that closer. There's some slack in the line there. Mm-hmm. There you go.
There we go. For the last year or so, I and a couple other staff members have been working with a regional team on developing some building code and development code amendments across the board
that will promote green, sustainable building practices. This was initiated by King County in part, by City of Seattle in part. There are several other jurisdictions joining in or expressing interest. And the idea was to have a series of code amendments in the building code and zoning codes that were similar across jurisdictions to get builders, you know, no surprises. You know, every time they come to a different jurisdiction, they have to deal with a different code. And so some of these amendments were designed so that they would be similar across jurisdictions, making it easier for builders to get used to doing green building practices. In October of 2011, the City Council was presented the International Green Construction Code as an option for adopting the build as a building code. At that meeting, they directed staff to look into some of the costs associated with that and also look into alternatives. We did some research and found that although the costs of building green and building to the IGCC, there wasn't a lot of research because not a lot of people have actually adopted the IGCC. So, but what we did find out with that there is a small cost increase in building green, especially for people, for developers who aren't used to it. There's a learning curve, there's a materials issue. So the City Council and other jurisdictions across the region decided during a time of economic downswing they didn't really want to adopt the IGCC, and so we looked into these to this effort as an alternative to that that won't be that big of an impact, hopefully, to the developers. So before the Planning Commission tonight is the part of it that deals with the development code or land use code amendments. The City Council will look at adopting the remainder of the building code, electrical, plumbing code amendments at the regular cycle in July. Participating jurisdictions include King County, Seattle, City of Tacoma, Mount Lake Terrace, Issaquah, and Redmond. Other jurisdictions have been in and out of the process, expressing interest, but not actually at this point ready to adopt anything. Snoqualmie, Kirkland, Friday Harbor, Snohomish County, Clark County, Bellevue, Edmonds, Sammamish, and Renton. So the core concepts for these code amendments, water conservation, the majority of the code amendments are actually water conservation, and the majority of them are in the plumbing code. We won't be looking at the plumbing code here, obviously, but we will be looking at setback flexibility for cisterns, which has to do with water conservation. There are materials conservation amendments that go in the building code. Energy conservation is building code and development code. We'll be looking at setback flexibility for exterior insulation on existing buildings. Sustainable transportation, it's mostly parking. Parking for electric vehicles and bicycle parking. And the miscellaneous code out there for reducing light pollution is in the development code. So we'll be looking at that. And this is a matrix of what the participating jurisdictions are expecting to adopt. It's not binding, of course. This is just what everybody is taking forward or has already taken forward to their councils and planning commissions. Issaquah pretty much adopted, already has adopted them all that are noted up there. Shorelines, a couple of the ones that we're going to look at today as far as electric vehicle charging stations and short and long-term bicycle parking, staff decided to back off the whole EV charging stations code that was that Mount Lake Terrace had has adopted and presented to everybody. It just seemed staff seemed reluctant to add more regulations for EV to commercial areas. What we're going to bring forth is just for multifamily. And of course, we're going to allow them charging stations, but we're not going to. Staff didn't feel like it was a good idea at this point to add regulations for that until we can see the if the market is going to support it. Actually, so moving on to the code amendments, as you saw in your packet, they're not exactly ready for adoption, or really even the language. We're going to be working on legislative format, legislative markup that we'll be presenting at the public hearing for these amendments that will be in April. As I mentioned before, the setback flexibility for exterior insulation would allow 4 inches into a setback. For existing buildings that want to add insulation to the outside that don't have room to add it to the inside. And setback flexibility for rainwater catchment systems, up to 600 gallons, they can project, the way the code is written is they can project to the property line. If they're more than 600 gallons, they can be 2.5 feet from the property line. And here's a picture of somebody adding exterior insulation. And these are different kinds of rainwater catchments. There's a rain barrel. And then on the bottom are examples of 600-gallon tanks. And these are some of the larger cisterns that would have to meet a minimum 2.5-foot setback. The light pollution prevention and light trespass prevention would require all new exterior fixtures to be downlit and shielded so that a neighboring property could not see the lamp itself. This is to promote healthy dark skies at night and prevent glare and light trespass from one property to another. Sustainable transportation. Bicycle parking. Our current code has bicycle parking provisions. It mentions long-term parking, but it doesn't give any numbers as far as it just says for buildings 10,000 square feet or more, you have to provide long-term parking, but it doesn't have design standards or say how many spaces. This amendment would change that and actually specify spaces. We would add requirements for short-term and long-term parking to multifamily, and it specifies design standards. Electric vehicle charging stations, our code, some of our codes mention it, some don't, in different commercial areas. But it doesn't have numbers for multifamily, and that is what this code is going to do, is actually require electric vehicle infrastructure, not the actual space itself at this point in time, but the wiring, the conduit, and all that needs to go in to a certain 10% of spaces in multifamily and the residential portions of mixed use. And this picture is an example of long-term parking, as opposed to just a bike rack, which is short-term parking. The long-term is intended for bikes that are going to be there more than 4 hours. Short-term is less than 4 hours. That's just a picture of electric vehicle charging. Timeline for this, there is a typo in your, well, it's not a typo, it's a mistake, in your packet as far as the public hearing. It says April 7th. It's actually April 4th. The public comment period on the SEPA threshold determination is going to start March 13th and run through the 28th. And of course, we take public comment up until and during the public hearing. Council discussion will be the end of April and adoption toward the end of May. And as I mentioned before, the related building code amendments will probably be before council in July. Extensive public outreach has already been performed for this. A lot of City of Seattle did the majority of the work. This is in your staff report as well, this slide. They reached out to builders, Master Building Association, Green Building Associations, the public, Bicycle Guild, structural engineers, and it was being with the regional group really helped to reach a lot more people than each jurisdiction just doing this on its own. So, but what I'm looking for here tonight, you have examples of the language. We're looking for feedback, what you actually think of these, and what you'd like to see when we come back for public hearing as far as actual code language, if there's anything specific or just anything more you want us to look into.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Any initial questions by members of the commission? Okay. So there are a few amendments that you've given to us, kind of the background that you've already explained to us. And then when we get into like page 23, they talk about some of the comprehensive plan goals that support that. And the timing and schedule you just shared with us. So if there's nothing, I mean, Commissioner Wagner.
Well, I do have a question, because typically when we have a study session, we're actually seeing the drafted legislative language, and I guess I'll have to assume and trust that this is sufficient for us for a study session perspective.
Yeah,
I just think it's odd from our process perspective that we're not seeing the drafted markup language tonight.
Well, we're hoping that the language won't change too much. That's kind of the idea behind having all the jurisdictions adopt very similar language. I have been working on the legislative markup, and I can get that to you before, well in advance of the public hearing.
Thank you. Yeah, because some of this is new, but other parts are going to replace, and so that's helpful for us if you can show us the markup. You don't have to give us an enormous document. You can just provide the pages where there's any change or if there's relative information we need that goes with it. So that would be great.
So attachment A is the actual language, right? It's just not shown in legislative format.
Yeah, okay. That's helpful. Thanks.
Right, and I do appreciate having this. I guess what I'm hearing Commissioner Wagner say and agree with is that, yes, these will be incorporated in various places, but we'd like to see it in the legislative version so that we can see what might be changed. Even though you've given us a great general overview, that helps us, particularly as we're forming comments to forward to council and address at the public hearing.
Okay,
commissioners? Commissioner Montero.
Yes, I have one question on page 33 for the code proposal for electric vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
I've put in several of these EV stations, and normally they have to have some sort of data connection as well. So some sort of accommodation for data back to the equipment room would be great.
Data?
Like a Cat5 cable back to their network.
Uh-huh.
It has to have access to the internet as well.
I wasn't aware of that.
Well, I think at one of our previous discussions when we were going through comp plan, I've forgotten which one of the commissioners brought up that if it's new development, it sometimes is easier and not significantly more expensive to put the infrastructure in while they're doing it versus if codes change and they subsequently are required to do it, then it is a more substantial cost. So, and I'm not sure who brought that up. The commissioner may remember who he was. So, is the intent of backing off on the electric vehicle charging infrastructure, is there a significant reason? Is there a sense that that would be an incredible burden to the development?
If you want, I think you're referring to what was proposed through the commercial development standards last month, where the infrastructure for charging stations would be part of the development. And so I believe it's parallel language with what Kim is presenting to you. And the idea is there's conduit and some wire. They don't actually have to put the station in until they want to or the demand is there. And I think it's parallel language.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Commissioner Wagner.
I think maybe what would be helpful to answer both Commissioner Montero's request and what I think you're alluding to is that if you look at the language, it currently says that it should be installed pursuant to the National Electric Code Article 625. It may actually have all the components that we need in there, but it might be helpful just to have a tiny little paragraph to explain to us what that is.
Okay.
Other questions?
I'm just wondering how much sort of very recent research has been done on the EV charging. And I just happened to see something the other day, but a trend towards replaceable batteries where you pick it up just at essentially a service station and swap it out. You no longer have to plug it in for hours. And my concern with stuff like this is that we don't hardwire things that are then obsolete by the time someone actually builds it. And particularly, I'm delighted to see that the spaces are no longer mandatory, because my concern is we'd have all these empty spaces that are dedicated to a use that just isn't going to happen. So the question is, how up-to-date is this versus something that got started 3 years ago?
Commissioners, questions? I have a couple of fairly simple ones. When you talk about the requirements for light trespass, and I'm wondering, are you talking about in a residential home, residential zone, that if they have like front lights on the front of their garage or in front of their house over the porch, that those would all have to be the kind that come down?
That's the way the draft is, yeah. It would apply to residential and commercial and multifamily.
Okay. So they could no longer have like the lantern kind that the bulb is shielded behind a frosted glass. Am I understanding that correctly?
Right.
Okay. And could you clarify where the outdoor floodlights by floodlight projection above the horizontal plane. Can you clarify what you mean by the horizontal plane? That might be helpful with a picture. Exactly.
Yeah, I knew that was going to come up, and it's been so long since we talked about it, I think I've forgotten what it meant.
The idea is that you can light your own property with that light. It's just that the shield or the direction has to be such that it doesn't go over your property line into somebody else's. So it's not to keep you from providing security for your own property.
For the floodlights?
Yeah, or porch lights. The idea is that it just lights your property. Does that make sense?
Well, I mean, it makes sense, but... just a question of clarification.
I think the horizontal plane refers to uplighting.
Oh, I'm sorry, a what?
Refers to uplighting. So your floodlights can't shine up. They have to shine down.
They have to go down on the ground.
Yeah.
Or straight.
Or straight, okay.
Or straight.
Okay. Commissioners, other questions? What is the definition of multifamily? I mean, I just want to make sure when you're talking about this, and that came up partly with the electric vehicle infrastructure and charging station.
Multifamily, I believe, is anything more than four units. I think it's defined in our development code. Mm-hmm.
And while you're looking, I'll tell you why that kind of jumped out at me. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, let's say that there's a place where they have, if it is four and they have eight units, maybe they're all one-bedroom units, something along that line. You're not at 10% would be, I guess, 0.8, so it would go up. But mm-hmm. So is that where the balance is? Because multifamily is five or above, so they would have to have a minimum of at least one. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes.
Okay. And that would it take the place of a proposed parking spot? Because I know that there are standards about how many parking stalls per number of bedrooms. So would that replace one of them, or would that be an addition?
No, and again, at this point, we're just talking about the infrastructure, so it wouldn't be reserved at this point. It would just be available.
Okay.
And if, you know, I would assume that if I were running an apartment complex and one of my tenants had an electric car, I would reserve that space for him.
Okay.
So I would hope that this would, you know, get ironed out as more and more cars are on the market. And
okay.
I do have another question.
Yes, Commissioner Montero.
Yeah, on page 28, under the section dealing with land use code for the cisterns, you talk about anything larger than 600 gallons may be permitted, but then you say that it has to be screened.
If it's in the front yard.
Yes. So this is commercial as well as private, right?
I don't think we weren't going to add this to the commercial code. It's
okay.
It's mainly residential.
Residential.
And the screening came up, excuse me, so that, you know,
okay,
people wouldn't have big ugly cisterns in their front yards. I mean, you'd have to come build some kind of lattice to go around it, or it would have to reflect the building materials, you know, and look really nice, or be screened with landscaping or something like that.
And Seattle has adopted this as well?
They are planning on it, yeah.
Okay. Can I ask just a quick question?
Yes, you may. Commissioner Kraft.
600 gallons, is there a scientific threshold that we're talking about here, or is it just a number that delineates? Is it a size issue?
It's a size issue. 600 gallons is, you know, we're talking 4 feet in diameter and less than 6 feet tall.
Okay.
You know, those are considered to be kind of negligible as far as something. It's like a size of an air conditioning unit.
Okay.
The larger cisterns are going to have more of an impact visually.
Okay. So. Thanks.
I'm sorry, I was going back to a topic that you left a question with, but I'm waiting to see where you guys are.
Did you have something you wanted to share with us right now?
Yeah, it'll probably need some clarification. What we have are a definition for apartment, a definition for multifamily. And the difference by the code is that multifamily talks about types of buildings, townhouses, apartment buildings, single-family attached, two or more duplexes. But when it comes to apartment, it talks about anything that's three or more dwelling units, three or more. So we should, I think that's the language that came from the council that Kim has been working with. We should clarify that we're using the right term
mm-hmm.
to reflect
yes.
what is intended.
Okay. Yes, I think that would be helpful.
That's all I have.
Okay.
Thanks.
I noticed on the map on the graph on page 35 that they talked about showers and changing facilities, and some of the localities are using that as an incentive. Is that something that the city has given thought to?
Staff did not want to put that extra burden on commercial development at this point.
Well, and that's why I'm saying it would be an incentive that if they did that, there would be a trade-off. So that's why I'm not talking about it being enforced.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just when I was looking at the chart and I saw that they used it as incentives for other areas because...
Yeah, City of Redmond.
Okay.
I'll look into that.
Okay. I don't think we have any more questions, or at least it appears that we're able to move forward. Are there any final comments that you'd like to share with us about that?
I appreciate your patience, and thank you for listening.
Okay. So what I'd like to do is public comment. Do we have anyone signed up for public comment for this?
No.
No. Okay. Great. Thank you. So we'll move on to our agenda item. I'm sorry. Not our agenda item. Our second director's report.
Thank you very much. I do have something very brief. It's related to your upcoming item 9B about forming a committee to point wells. Simply only that we suggest that the committee as it forms should also, or as a complete commission, talk about the purpose of the committee first, so that you feel like there's some direction and some focus to it, and before actually forming the committee. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cohen. So our next item, which is under new business, is the bylaws amendment, and Jessica, are you the one that's sharing with us on this, or is it?
Sure, yes. So you have before you a copy of your bylaws with two specific amendments. The first one under order of business is removing one of the two directors' comments. The history to that is the past director had added that because he wanted to save time at the end of the agenda for longer reports, but the two areas are no longer needed. So as I wrote in the staff report, it's proposed to get rid of the first one so we can get right to the public's business. And then the second amendment is just adding a section 5 for noticing, saying that we're going to notice Planning Commission meetings in the same way that we notice City Council meetings. And that's posting at the bulletin here in City Hall. And obviously, we also email agendas and post to the website.
Okay. So those are the two changes. Any questions by commissioners? Okay. I think that was pretty straightforward.
You have to do it by... Motion or
yeah, and can we do that right now?
Yeah, you don't have to have a public hearing.
Commissioner Wagner,
I move that we adopt the Planning Commission bylaws as drafted by staff.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Commissioner Montero seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Abstain. Okay. That
I have one other thing. It's not an amendment, but I did read here under schedule. If a regular meeting falls on a legal holiday, the scheduled meeting shall be postponed to the succeeding Thursday unless a majority of the commission votes to select another day or to cancel the meeting. And this year, your first regular meeting of the month in July falls on the 4th of July. So I don't know if you want to have a discussion about that now, whether to have the meeting the following week or to cancel it.
Are you talking about putting that in our Well, I mean, it's already addressed in the bylaws. You're
It's just having a discussion about it ahead of time.
Since we're way ahead in the middle of the byline.
Yeah.
So
I think we'd probably need to know what's on the docket by then, right? I mean, well, I know we have that, but
it doesn't go to July.
It just seems a little, right.
Right.
Yeah, we just have a little early.
Yeah. So no, as the time gets closer, I just wanted to bring that up. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that Commissioner Scully kind of hit it on the head, because obviously you're going to have to look at the things that we need to complete this year, and will it be essential for us to have another meeting or not? If I recall, it seems like we've had meeting with council sometimes around that time, and then it superseded one of our meetings if it was around a holiday, but I could be confused. Commissioner Wagner, you've been here longer than I.
I know that the meetings with councils have typically superseded our meetings, but I don't know that we planned it with so much sophistication to plan around a holiday, because it's not very, the only one that comes to mind is Thanksgiving, that normally falls on a Thursday, so
right.
Everything else is a Monday holiday, so I think we'd have as much leeway as we want, because we can, I was actually, in my mind, I was thinking that we need our commissioner retreat, and that might be a good one if we pushed it back a week, and instead of having a business meeting, had a retreat in the summer. That might not
okay.
be
okay. That is
two meetings in a month, but then it's not business.
Right, and a little more flexible, and doesn't necessarily have to be on a Thursday.
Yeah.
Well, of course, that is vacation time, so I will remind all the commissioners, as you are aware of days that you will be gone for regularly scheduled meetings, please let Jessica know so that she can work on that. And then Steve can also, when they're looking, Steve and Paul, as they're looking at what do we want to talk about, keeping those things in mind. Because a couple times, I think we lacked a quorum.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just had to cancel a meeting because so many people are going to be gone. And granted, we are volunteers, so we try, but sometimes we just can't be there for everything. So we don't need to vote on that. That was just discussion. And the next item of business, I moved my agenda. That's what I get for moving my agenda.
Quite well.
Thank you, Commissioner Kraft. Okay, so the next item is discuss forming a committee to follow Point Wells. And based on Mr. Cohen's recommendation that we talk about the purpose and what they would be doing, I do think that that's a valuable place to start. So, commissioners, thoughts? Commissioner Montero?
Yeah, of course, I think the purpose is fairly common sense. I mean, obviously, you know, certain group or portion of the commission should attend neighborhood meetings. They should, constantly review the status of what's going on with, say, Richmond Beach group and what's going on in their meetings, participate there, or not participate, at least attend. Review any staff reports and recommendations and interaction they're having with any groups involved in the Point Wells project. I would also encourage the committee to review any progress in the permitting process in Snohomish County and what's going on there. Any developments from the developer as well and what he's up to. And then report back to the Planning Commission so that we're not caught reading tons of papers, so we're up to date with what's going on.
Thank you, Commissioner Montero. Other thoughts by other commissioners? Commissioner Scully.
I think that's a fantastic idea. We should be careful to message it, that that committee doesn't then become the source of the public comment, only because that subcommittee is not going to have a huge impact on the course of this. And there are, city council is probably the right place to direct public comment at this stage, because I don't think we as a commission are going to have much of a role, at least in the next couple steps. I don't want people to think that we are the ones they should be lobbying to get these changes done, because we don't have a role in making it happen.
So if I hear you correctly, you're saying that this would be a method for the subcommittee to keep up to date and then share with the rest of the committee. And I was thinking about our other subcommittee that we have, which is the light rail, which is of interest to a lot of people. And so the subcommittee has said, okay, we're going to have our meeting, and then once a month we're going to have an update, and if people want to share their thoughts or comments, they could. So I'm trying to understand why we wouldn't listen to those, or if we're having a subcommittee, I don't know. I'm just trying to wrap my brain around why we
just we need to call it a study committee or something, because I don't want to see Save Richmond Beach flood this room on the mistaken belief that a subcommittee report is the chance to make an impact, because citizen involvement, you know, people only have so many evenings free, and they should turn out their people for the city council meetings and the other hearings where a decision is actually made. Whereas we're studying it, which is proper, but we're not making a decision about anything, at least not now.
So let me rephrase that. What you see the subcommittee's purpose is to filter through the information and bring the highlights to the full commission. Am I correct?
They're a monitoring group. It's not a decision-making or even an information-collecting-to-make-a-decision group.
Okay. Thank you. Other commissioners, thoughts about that? Mr. Cohen, any thoughts? Sorry, I didn't mean to startle you there.
I was about to say something.
Who is the Point Wells guru now in the planning and community in your department?
Yeah, there's several gurus. Well, collectively we make a guru, but my name is probably attached to it more than anybody else's, just to keep track of things. But between basically Rachel and I, Rachel's involved with some other committee meetings at the city council level, and I'm tracking the actual permit that's been vested up there in Snohomish County and everything in between. So it's basically the two of us. I expect that either Rachel or I will come to you, like Rachel did, I think, a couple meetings ago, came back and updated you on the status of things. As things progress and there's something to report, we will come to you at the next meeting and put that as part of the director's report. So a number of these items that Commissioner Montero brought up, you know, any kind of staff reports or stat read, anything change, any change in the status of the project, that's something we'll typically bring to you.
But let to me the full committee.
Yeah. So let me talk to Rachel tomorrow and discuss with her what we're doing, how that feeds into the committee that you're talking about here, to make sure that we're not duplicating things or creating, we want to create information but not necessary confusion. So let me work on that, and we can refine that for you.
Commissioners? Commissioner Scully, you look like you have something to say.
I think that's just the way I usually look.
Okay. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
I think unless we're hearing from staff, they don't want us to establish this. I don't see any reason we can't establish it with the exact parameters to be defined. Is that what we're proposing?
I think that's certainly an appropriate thing for us to do. And then by the time that we have our next meeting, it would become part of the old business, and we could really, hopefully, one of the meetings coming up, that we could start refining a little bit more of the role and the purpose of the subcommittee. So, and that would be great information in our packet when we get it, is kind of what you're hearing and seeing as well, so, or your perspective.
It's very likely that I'll come to that next meeting with an update status and kind of further refinement for you, so that you can feel like you're getting direct information and nothing overlapping or confusing. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that being said, commissioners, are a couple of people have spoken in favor of this. Other thoughts? Yes, no, and so are we in favor of creating a subcommittee for this? Can we just kind of do we're not making a motion, but I'm just trying to get a sense of things here. So Commissioner Kraft, I saw you raise your hand.
Yes, I would be in favor of creating a subcommittee along the lines of what Commissioner Scully envisioned.
And Commissioner Montero, I think I saw you nodding your head. Commissioner Mall? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm seeing a lot of head nodding. So the next thing is, who would like to participate in that subcommittee? And We have to have only three, because if we have more than three, we become a quorum. We do have one other subcommittee that's already in progress, so that's something to keep in mind. And can a subcommittee be two people? Mm-hmm. Would we need three people? Mm-mm. Because there's so much staff work that's being done.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lower limit to it.
Okay. So, Commissioner Wagner.
I don't even think that we need, I think one of the things we had talked about a long time ago was having people that would volunteer to go to various neighborhood meetings, and that never really fleshed out because it was another additional meeting. But I think something like that, if somebody, you could even have just one person or coordinate it somewhat informally to say, hey, we know this meeting's coming up, is there someone who could do it? And as long as we're not sending four people to the same meeting, if we knew in advance that there was going to be a Save Mitchman Beach meeting next Wednesday, any member of the commission, I think, would be appropriate to go, given availability and interest.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Scully?
I like the idea of someone who's sort of, it's their responsibility to track it at least, and I nominate Commissioner Montero because it was his idea.
I was going to go there.
I second that.
Commissioner Montero?
On the floor.
Yeah. I went to the last meeting. It was very quiet.
Yeah.
And there was three staff people there, and they did a great job, great presentation. And, you know, it's noticed that we're there.
Yeah, yes. I was there too, and the reception was very warm, just yes. To have us showing up. And
right. And I think that's really important, because there's so much that goes on around that, and we kind of get the Reader's Digest condensed version highlights. And this is something that's come before the commission in various and assorted ways. Well, I don't know how far back. Commissioner Wagner, were they talking about it before you came on board?
About attending the neighborhood meeting?
No, about Point Wells and, say, Richmond Beach.
No, the development...
5 years.
The first I heard of it was when there was a proposal that was being kicked around. The okay. first time we started talking about the comp plan.
Okay.
This is, I think, the third time we've done something with the comp plan.
Okay.
But to answer your question, yes.
Yeah.
Before.
Okay. So, but it has been around. So, Commissioner Montero, would you be willing to be the primary point? And are we feeling that we want a secondary to back up Commissioner Montero? Or would that be something? I'm looking for options.
I'd be willing to do that.
Would you be willing to share that responsibility with him?
Mm-hmm. Super.
Okay.
Thanks.
If that, I have no concerns about that, so I think that's wonderful. So let the record show that Commissioner Montero and Vice Chair Esselman are going to be the primary point of contact from the Planning Commission regarding Point Wells. Okay. Thank you for coming forward and volunteering, because it's going to be, I'm sure it's going to pick up steam sooner and faster than the light rail station piece. So not that light rail's not as important, but okay. We are now on reports of committees and commissioner announcements.
I'm wondering if we should ask Commissioner Montero. Do you have
a report?
Attended?
No.
Okay. And, you know, we may find that as time goes on, we'll figure out where that best niche is. And if I'm correct, we need to put forth to council that we have done this. Do they have to provide approval? Looking in here, it sounds like we didn't have to.
But I think commission bylaws, they serve at the pleasure of the chair.
Okay. Well, I'm pleasured that Cynthia, Vice Chair Esselman,
and several members of the council were there.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
If you are going to have a meeting schedule, we do post it to the Planning Commission webpage.
Okay. And I think this is something that it kind of will evolve over the next couple of months, and then it'll be clear as to the best structure and the role. So I appreciate that very much. Any further comments about subcommittee? Okay, so then we really are on to reports of committees and commissioners' announcements. And do we have anything from our station area subcommittee? if I remember right, we're going to post that on as one of our items of business at least once a month. Mm-hmm. And so
The meetings are every third Friday of the month, so the report would probably be the next meeting right after your meeting.
Right. Yeah.
I'm going to try to track that, and it's not always going to align perfectly.
Okay.
But I'll try to do my best.
Okay, that would be great. And then maybe you can put those on the agenda planner just so that we have them as a point of reference.
Okay.
Other announcements? Good news? Excitement? Okay, well, then we are on to our agenda for March 21st. Mr. Zaffron?
Yes. Well, starting on March 21st, we'll have the public hearing for the SEPA Development Code Amendments. Dan Ernesty, Economic Development Manager, will be here to discuss the Community Renewal Area plan for Aurora Square, and also under new business is the annual report to council.
I think we, thanks to Commissioner Wagner for reminding us, I think we did talk about that a little bit, and in the past it sounds as though either Jessica or somebody from staff has drafted kind of a first brush by going through all of our agendas and seeing some of the things that we've accomplished. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I believe last year, when you were chair, Commissioner Wagner, did you see it before, or did we bring it before the entire commission first?
I got it, and I edited it, and then I presented it to the commission, and we discussed it briefly at one meeting, and then it was forwarded on to council.
Okay, so is your, when you say 10 minutes, would that be the draft as a place to start, and that we would then be, that would be presented during that 10-minute period under new business? I'm just looking for a little more information as to, because it is better to start that sooner than later, and that was part of it the last time.
Yeah.
We were kind of rushed in being able to get it out.
The way it worked last go-around was, just like Michelle said, I drafted it. I sent it to her over email so she can polish it, add things based on her recollection of the past year. And then I provide the commission with a draft outside of the packet, because it's kind of awkward to have a draft letter inside
right.
the packet.
Right.
Yeah.
And so is that the proposal, that you will have that draft that you would prepare and I would review in the interim, and that's what we would have then at the next, on the March 21st Planning Commission meeting?
Yeah, so probably received over email and hard copy, so you can make notes during the meeting, and then we'll finalize it and make it public.
Okay. Commissioners, any thoughts, concerns?
And then point out a couple things on future agendas. To point out, on May 2nd, we have it's informed that City Council would like to come here to discuss the light rail. And is that, Paul, what you heard? Director Marco wanted me to point that out to you.
Okay.
I don't know yet.
Okay.
Okay, and then on the 18th, if we haven't already finalized the annual report, that would be the time that we would do that. Yeah, that's what I was saying. That is the plan. Okay. Oh, and our group photograph.
Oh. Oh, no. With the new officers.
Group photograph?
With the new one?
Again.
Oh.
And so, when you talk about the Thursday, May 2nd meeting, the light rail stationary planning discussion with the City Council, would council be coming here, or we'd be going there?
That's what he said, that he didn't know.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I believe that they'd be coming here, but
that's far enough out that we can probably confirm that.
Yeah,
that would be great.
A lot of this agenda planner, the extended agenda planner, is kind of placeholder until things firm up, but we just want to get an idea of a couple months down the line, so
really intended for just next week. And
when you read it, it's very tentative at times.
Okay. And as I mentioned earlier, if you do know dates that you're going to be gone anytime through the end of the year for a regular meeting, please let Jessica know. And with that, if we have nothing else to discuss this evening, I am adjourning this meeting.
Perfect.